I'm very happy now to welcome Peter Simonson. He's executive director of the New Mexico ACLU, and he will be giving a talk tonight titled NSA Surveillance and You, How the Government is Spying on Us and Why We Should Care. It's at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what are the various ways in which the government is spying on us?
Well, I suspect that we don't know all the different ways that the government is spying on us. That's part of the problem, is that the government's surveillance apparatus is largely carried out in secret. And it's only through the leaks of people like Edward Snowden that we've really come to find out just the depths to which the government goes to try and collect bulk information about how Americans are, telephone and internet activity by innocent Americans. What Snowden's leaks have disclosed is that there are at least two authorities that the federal government is using to carry out surveillance. One is a provision within the USA Patriot Act, Section 215, where the federal government, FBI, is able to serve an order on a telecom provider. It could be a bookstore, it could be just about any business, demanding the production of all material records that are collected by that business. And they don't have to specify in that order that they're targeting a particular individual, or that they're even just targeting a particular time and date. They can serve the order upon the business, and it could go into effect for multiple months and collect all of the records from everybody who uses that business during that time. The other major authority that we've come to learn about is under the FISA Amendments Act, which is better known as the NSA wiretapping program, where the government is allegedly using wiretaps to collect intelligence about phone calls, emails, internet activity that are taking place from the United States with outside points, or from points outside the United States into the United States, that concern terrorist targets. The interesting thing about the way that program is used is that while the government maintains that that program exclusively targets foreign actors, foreign terrorist suspects, and that's true, but the term targeting is sort of a term of art in the surveillance community, which only means that that's the subject of whom the information is being collected, but that doesn't mean that it precludes the government's ability to gather telecom information from people who are in the United States, could in fact be United States citizens, that may actually be about that target, even if the target isn't one of the participants in the phone call or the email exchange. So it's the FISA Amendments Act and it's the Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act are the primary, as I say, authorities, legal authorities that the government is using that have come to light recently. There are some other things that Snowden has leaked, and there are other programs that were created under, or there are other powers that were created under the USA Patriot Act that the government may well be using in ways that they were not originally intended, and we just don't know the facts about those other programs to the degree of detail that we do about these.
And what we do know, we know through Edward Snowden.
Well, at least partially, sort of in the wake of Snowden's disclosures, there's been more information forthcoming from the federal government. But I think, by and large, what Snowden did was to give us a better sense, number one, of the magnitude of data collection that the federal government is engaging in. For example, we learned that Verizon Wireless had been served with one of these Section 215 orders that I mentioned earlier that collected all of the phone records, the numbers that people were calling from and the numbers that they were calling to, for nearly 3 months' time, not just of an individual, not just of some individuals that were believed to be part of a terrorist cell, but indeed all phone records that were generated by all users during that period. So that the extent of surveillance is part of what's important that Snowden has disclosed. And then the other thing that I think is very important is that we've learned that the secret court that has been created under previous surveillance law and was given some new authority under the USA Patriot Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, has generated secret legal opinions about how it interprets these various powers that were created, as I say, under the Patriot Act or the FISA Amendments Act. And we have been unable to actually obtain those legal opinions. But Snowden disclosed that those opinions very broadly interpret the extent to which those powers can be applied and the liberal way in which the government is actually using those powers to collect bulk information about Americans' communications activity.
So basically, the idea that somebody in our government would go to court and say, we have reason to suspect so-and-so and get a wiretap on that person, that's out the window. They can just wiretap anybody at will.
Well, if the government is making the argument that the target of that surveillance activity is a terrorist suspect, generally speaking, in these various laws that we're talking about, it has given them a relaxed standard to meet for obtaining those warrants. And indeed, sometimes they can actually administratively, internally, give themselves those powers. For example, the National Security Letter provision in the USA Patriot Act, it's a very similar provision to the Section 215 order that I mentioned, where it can be served upon a business and command the production of material records. That's something that's internally administered. It doesn't even get any sort of judicial oversight to speak of.
But, I mean, you're talking about every single customer of Verizon Wireless. That's even beyond anything that we imagined outside of science fiction.
Well, it's beyond anything I think we even conceived when we were talking when the Patriot Act was in the midst of passage. You know, the public received all sorts of guarantees from our government and from Congress that these authorities were going to be used responsibly, judiciously. They're going to be used in a tailored way to focus on terrorist targets, and we come to find that the government is constantly clawing for more expansive interpretations of how it can use those authorities. And, you know, ultimately, all the surveillance activity generates a massive amount of data. There was a time when I think we didn't have to fear that we would somehow suffer the repercussions of that kind of surveillance because, you know, our anonymity gives us a certain degree of privacy and obscurity that protects us from the government's intervening on our individual privacy and making a mess of our lives. But increasingly, the government has tools at its disposal, you know, softwares, algorithms, that allow it to make quick sense of all of that mass of information and identify what it believes to be patterns of suspicious activity. And those are patterns of activity that are entirely innocent, but that maybe the government has believes to represent a profile for a terrorist suspect or a profile for someone who transports drugs. And so, you know, on the basis of our innocent activity, we can still become the target of government scrutiny. And once that happens, you know, your life can be interfered with in ways that you just can't possibly imagine.
Well, like that guy who was doing a Google search for backpacks on the same day that his wife was doing a Google search for pressure cookers, and this was after the Boston Marathon, and they were visited by a bunch of men in black suits with a black SUV with tinted windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and during the talk I'll give tonight, I'll talk about some of the other cases that the ACLU has worked on that illustrate how innocent Americans, people who are just going about their everyday activities, can run afoul of this kind of surveillance activity and thinking that they pose no threat to the United States, that they're not terrorists, and that they have nothing to hide in their activity. Ultimately, while they may not have anything to hide, they certainly do have something to fear from such broad government surveillance.
I remember when I was a kid and the Soviet Union still existed, and Soviet Union spied on its own people, and that was considered the greatest scandal ever. And what we're doing is virtually, I mean, is there any difference?
You know, frankly, I think that we're only talking about difference in terms of degrees. It may be that the government is not so broadly collecting the content of everyone's telephone or email communications, although I would want to put a disclaimer on that, that they may actually be doing that because, again, we have no way of knowing what the government is actually doing, and they won't disclose or they will not be transparent with the public. But at least from the information that has come to light so far, it seems like most of the surveillance activity is not just directly gathering the content, but is gathering more the transactional data in email, internet, and phone activity. And by that I mean, for example, where phone calls are concerned, the phone number you call from and the phone number that you call to and an email, the email address you call, you send from and the email address you send to. But we should beware of the implications of that. On the face of it, it may not seem like a major infringement on privacy. But if you begin to consider what it means for the government to know every person that you have called at what time of day and from what place throughout a period of maybe 3 or 4 months and maybe even longer, you know, you begin to realize that the government could create quite a profile on you, particularly if you are involved in political activity. The government can scout out your infidelities. They can figure out what sort of medical or health-related issues you may have. That information alone, and there are other domains where the government is collecting information on us, for example, our travel behavior through video surveillance cams and license plate scanners and cell phone tracking devices, that, you know, the government can really develop a refined picture of who you are based on what appears to be on the surface relatively basic information.
We're talking to Peter Simonson, Executive Director of the ACLU of New Mexico. The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States reads that the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Listening to you talk, it's impossible for me to conceive that this whole set of activities isn't anything but completely and totally unconstitutional. What is your take on that?
Well, we would tend to agree with you. You know, there may well be pieces of what the government is doing in its intelligence gathering activity that would pass muster under the Fourth Amendment, but by and large, I think it is our feeling that much of this activity is unconstitutional. Unfortunately, your rights under the Constitution are oftentimes only as good as your ability to pay an attorney to defend those rights in court. And so the ACLU, of course, our mission is to see those rights protected and for folks not to have to pay for those rights to be protected. We do all of our work pro bono in the courts, of course. But what attempts the ACLU has made to challenge, for example, the national security letter provision that I mentioned earlier, the Section 215 provision of the USA Patriot Act that I also mentioned, when we have come up with plaintiffs who we can safely say that the knowledge that their information, their phone activity is being tracked by the government threatens their First Amendment rights. For example, we represent an attorney here in Albuquerque, a lawyer named Nancy Hollander, who has clients overseas that she represents on a legal basis as a lawyer, and she can't confidently say that her communications with her clients, which should be protected by attorney-client privilege, are indeed private and confidential. They could well be the subject of some of the surveillance. So the ACLU has filed litigation in federal court seeking to declare that, for example, Section 215 should be unconstitutional, the NSA wiretapping program, the FISA Amendments Act, should be unconstitutional because it precludes the ability of attorneys like Nancy to carry on a relationship with a client overseas through the phone or through email or internet. Well, in each instance where we have filed those cases, federal courts have dismissed those cases, saying that we didn't have standing to bring the lawsuit because we could not demonstrate that our clients had actually been damaged by these laws. Of course, what it would require for us to show that our clients had been damaged would be for the government to disclose information that it had decidedly used those authorities, used those powers to track the information of our clients, that it had in fact captured the information that our clients were we're transmitting through phone or email or internet. But that information is classified, and the government asserts that it's classified. And the courts have therefore said, if you can't get a hold of the information, even if it's because it's classified, then you've got no standing to bring those lawsuits. And so the lawsuits have been dismissed over and over again. That situation may change in the near future, because one of the disclosures Edward Snowden made is something that I talked about a little earlier, which is that the government, according to Snowden, had during a three-month period right after the Boston Marathon bombing, served a Section 215 order on Verizon Wireless and had collected the phone records of every user of Verizon Wireless during a three-month period. As it turns out, the ACLU's telecom provider is Verizon Wireless. Our attorney's communications were undoubtedly subject to a trap and trace order. The phone numbers that they were calling, the phone numbers they were calling from, the places where they were calling into and where they were calling from, all of that's been gathered by intelligence authorities. And so now maybe we do, in fact, have standing to bring a lawsuit. And so the ACLU has filed a new legal challenge in federal court against that program.
What is the significance of the fact that so much intelligence and surveillance work is being done by private contractors rather than government employees?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that we can fully understand the implications of that. Because it's hard. Certainly, one of the implications is it's been hard enough to force the government to be transparent, to compel the government to be transparent on the way it's using these intelligence powers. Far more difficult is to get a third party to be transparent when, in fact, they're a private contractor and there may be questions raised about whether they're subject to the Freedom of Information Act. So I think at the very least, one of the greatest threats is the lack of transparency and how an already dim and murky situation only becomes darker and more difficult to sort through. I suppose, I certainly have questions about the degree to which a private contractor will be responsible in using these kinds of powers if indeed you've got third parties carrying out some of the surveillance. You know, we have the Inspector General of the Department of Justice has published numerous reports showing that even our own government has abused, for example, the national security letter provision that I mentioned earlier of the Patriot Act. You can only imagine when you get yet one more degree removed from government accountability that a private contractor would be inclined to be even less responsible in the use of these powers.
I think it's probably useful for all of us to do a thought experiment, which is that if you could commit a crime, if you could just spy on whoever you wanted to and know for sure that you would never be caught, what would you do? And to what extent would your own ethics prevent you from doing things, and to what extent would they not? Again, the point being, you will never be caught. I cannot imagine that you have somebody like Snowden, who is a 29-year-old dude contractor. He could wiretap his ex-girlfriend if he wanted to. He could wiretap a federal judge if he wanted to. And you can't imagine a scenario in which that isn't happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've often wondered whether it's remarkable how so often in political races around the country, some scandalous information comes to light that winds up wrecking a political career or foundering a political campaign, and I've often wondered, where does that information come from? Might it be that some of the surveillance activity is generating that kind of information? That is certainly one of the key threats that this kind of unfettered, unmonitored surveillance creates, to manipulate the political system, to eliminate those people through blackmail or extortion or what have you, through the use of information gathered through surveillance. can we trust that our political system isn't already being somehow affected by the use of the surveillance in ways that it was not meant for?
Well, and then if you have, for example, a J. Edgar Hoover type who has power within one of the many intelligence agencies that we have, and they decide that they don't like environmental organizations, or they decide they don't like gay organizations, the amount of damage they can do when they're invading other people's privacies and right to organize and all of that stuff is inestimable.
Absolutely. And you know, there are countless examples of where law enforcement has used much lesser surveillance kinds of procedures to pursue their own individual agendas. Officers, you mentioned it actually earlier, officers finding out where a former girlfriend lives and who's visiting that girlfriend and who she, what phone calls she's making, things of that nature. So, you know, we're talking about a surveillance system that is nationwide, indeed international in scope, with hundreds if not thousands of people gaining access to that kind of information or being responsible for creating the access. It only multiplies the possibilities for misuse and ruining other people's lives.
Is there a path to undoing this, to restoring actual checks and balances, to bringing transparency into this process? It seems kind of hopeless.
Boy, I think we're sort of left with some of the traditional tools. We have to insist with our congressional representatives that they bring some accountability to the way these intelligence powers are being used. Here in New Mexico, we're fortunate that Senator Heinrich sits on the Senate Subcommittee for Intelligence, and he's certainly someone that New Mexicans should be contacting to express their concern about what Snowden has disclosed and any other information about the scope of secret government surveillance in our country. And I think that he is someone in Congress who is sympathetic to that concern, and he's in a place where he can actually do something about it. So I would, I should say that even when a congressional delegate is sympathetic to a cause like ours, they may not always feel empowered to voice their opinions about such things and to take action and to be bold in trying to insist upon accountability from government. It's really important that even if you know your senator or your representative believes like you do, it's important for them to hear from you so they feel empowered to be able to take action in Congress. And so I would just urge the public, if these are issues that are important to you, to contact Senator Heinrich's office, contact our other congressional delegates, and let them know how you feel about these issues. That's one of our tried and true ways of trying to rein in authority in this way. And, of course, for an organization like the ACLU, it is our mission to insist upon government accountability. And I like to think that while we're not always successful, we do have successes. And, the courts still stand as the check on both executive and legislative power. And that's the place where the ACLU tries to carry out its work. So supporting your ACLU is another way that you can try and rein in government authority.
Peter Simonson is the executive director of the New Mexico ACLU, and he will be giving a talk tonight titled NSA Surveillance and You, How the Government is Spying on Us and Why We Should Care. It's at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Santa Fe. It's free and open to the public. Peter, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.